week 118 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. And I'm joined by, as always, Alex Brada, along with Micaiah Kruko, Noah Kruko. And it's been about, what, a month since we were on here last?
I don't know. We were arguing about coronavirus back then.
Yeah. So it can't be longer than 2 months because we've been in the middle of this pandemic about 2 months now.
I want to say it was about a month and a half, probably. Because yeah, it was only a couple weeks after things started to hit around here, like the NBA schedule stopped and all that.
Here's what's weird, and I don't want to get off track early, but does it seem like we actually, like this whole coronavirus thing, it's lasted 2.5 months now, but mm-hmm. does it feel like to everybody else that in a way the time has moved by quickly?
Kind of. I can understand Alex? What you mean by that.
Alex?
I wouldn't, it hasn't moved quickly for me, I don't think. It's been kind of, I wouldn't say slow, but not too far off normal. I guess it depends on the time of the year. For me, you know, winter time seems to go slower. To me, it's been, time has moved kind of like winter time in Iowa. So, yeah, fairly slow, but not, I wouldn't say fast.
I just look at the, I mean, we're already almost to June.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. As me as a sports guy, and of course we're talking sports, we're on here. Usually April and May and June are really hard months. Because now listen, you get nice weather. That's the great thing about it. But what's going on in April, May, and June? Well, typically the NBA, I get that.
The NBA playoffs and
yep.
the latter part of April into May and June.
But you guys both know, you know, I'm Hawkeye through and through, and it's tough to not have college football or college basketball, and you've kind of got a dry spell. Until you get to July, you really can't talk college football too much.
Right.
And now we don't have any NBA or anything. So, I don't know. It just seems like we're already almost to June. This summer is going to fly by.
And it's kind of unfortunate that we're not going to be able to capitalize on the nice weather we're having right now. By going out and playing football, playing basketball, we're stuck inside. But that's
when do you think that? And I've had discussions with Alex, and he kind of looks at it from a more of a, I don't want to say a negative perspective, but we can all speculate till we're blue in the face. But when do you guys foresee things getting to a point? I mean, this virus ain't gonna go away until you get a vaccine, and you know, even then, you're probably not totally immune to it. But when do you foresee things getting to a point where we all feel comfortable playing basketball, playing football? Because it's not going to go away. But when, if you had to predict, when is that day going to come?
Mid-August?
I mean,
late August?
For me, I'd probably say maybe sometime next year.
Ooh.
Next year?
Well, people are saying there's going to be a resurgence of all this when fall and winter start to roll back around. So,
well, here's the thing, and this is how I look at it, and I could be wrong on this. It's just a prediction. The numbers are going down in most areas, and we all agree on that, right? The numbers are going down in most areas. I'm not saying it's safe right now to do that kind of thing. It's not. But the numbers are going down, and it's May 19th. I think in 2 weeks, a lot of people are going to feel really comfortable. I'm not saying I'm going to. Take it another 4 weeks, another whole month, get past the month of June. I think once we get to July, weather's hot. We know viruses have a hard time surviving in the heat typically. I think once we get to July, if we're not feeling comfortable by then, we're not going to feel comfortable this year.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I said maybe sometime next year.
Well,
baseball's coming back in July.
You could be right on that, Noah, but my point is, Micaiah, I don't think it's going to be August. I think if anything, this year it's going to be sooner than that because, I mean, it could come. Listen, it's going to come back. It's going to come back in the fall or winter. We just don't know how strongly it's going to come back. And we also don't know when this vaccine, you know, they say, well, it takes the medical world, you know, over a year to get a vaccine. Well, the medical world has never dealt with this, right? The modern medical world has not dealt with this sort of a pandemic. since really the early 1900s. I mean, I don't think the H1N1 virus was anything even close to this. So you can't really compare the two.
Ebola, maybe, but it.
But Ebola was so Ebola was so hard to transfer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had to basically transfer bodily fluids. No, seriously, you really did. And this is so easily transmissible. And so it's not as deadly as Ebola. We know that, not even close to as deadly as Ebola, but it's so transmissible. And so I don't know. I look at it and I say, I'm obviously hoping, I think like all of us, that we get our summer and we can have a normal summer. If it comes back in the winter, so be it. I'm not saying, you know, we throw caution to the air. But if at least we get back to somewhat normal summer, enjoy the summer, if we have to deal with stay-at-home orders and whatnot, isolation again this winter, fine. I think the vaccine's going to be here sooner rather than later. I'm looking at it from a positive perspective. But I'm saying if it comes back in November and it lasts until January, we get a vaccine in February, everybody gets shot up by March, theoretically, we put this behind us. There's all kinds of things we don't know.
Right.
So
all we can do at this point is speculate.
Right. And, of course, the world of sports got underway this past weekend. And as sad as it is, and this shows you how much we've been missing sports, I watched NASCAR on Sunday.
Oh, no.
You'd probably rather watch.
There's paints on that wall over there. It's drying as we speak, okay? More entertaining than NASCAR.
So you're saying you'd rather watch 2K? I shouldn't ask you. Alex, would you rather watch real NASCAR racing, or would you rather watch
NBA players in a 2K tournament?
Patrick Beverley play Harrison Barnes in NBA 2K.
I'd rather play NBA 2K.
Okay, fine, but let's be realistic about this. NASCAR isn't the worst thing ever. Listen, no. I've come to appreciate sports like NASCAR more over the last couple of months because I was watching it Sunday.
These are the end times, man.
I was watching it on Sunday, and I'm really sitting there. I'm thinking, this is nice. Like, I'm thinking, like, at least we got something real here. You know, and we're going to get golf back. There was some golf this weekend. It was like a 2-on-2 competition between some PGA players. We're going to get
that makes sense because for the most part, they separate anyways, playing on different holes at different times.
And why did NASCAR ever stop in the first place?
My guess would be, the pit crews.
But they're all masked up. They're all in like suits. They're basically in hazmat suits already.
Eh.
No, I get it. And there's guys behind the scene, and that's what I've been told. There's hundreds of people behind the scenes of these events that you've got to keep those guys in mind. I get that.
Right.
But I don't know. It was refreshing to see some form of sports this past weekend. And we're going to get more back slowly. I'm not saying that we feel safe going out and doing things, but we're going to get more back slowly. And I'm hoping that next time we're on here, hopefully we can do another podcast in June. Next time we're on here, we'll be looking at and say, hey, we're close to being able to you know, get out and enjoy the summer. But I guess we'll just have to see.
College football and the NFL would not be delayed in the start of their season, but we don't quite know that for sure yet.
I think the bigger question
we're working on.
Yeah, I think the bigger question is college football. I think the NFL, and we can kind of jump into this because that's obviously something we're going to talk about. Now that we have a better feel for this, I think the last time we were on, we were really talking about, is the NBA season going to start back up? We were talking about it, the MLB. Is the baseball going to start up?
They made that announcement.
What's that?
They made an announcement. Their MLB is starting their season or restarting their season, whatever, on July 4th.
Right. So I think we have a better feel for things now. My bigger fear is, and of course we're Hawkeye-based here, we're focused on Iowa sports. There's a real concern amongst members of the NCAA that everybody's going to be able to start in September. That's the big concern right now. California State Universities have announced that they will not have students on campus this fall. And it's been an understanding by, I think, most parties involved that if you don't have students on campus in September. You're not having student athletes playing sports in September.
Right.
So now that's just California State Universities. It doesn't apply to USC. It doesn't apply to USC or UC, same school twice. UCLA. It does apply to schools like San Diego State, Fresno State, some smaller, I say smaller, non-Power 5 schools. But my point here is are we going to be looking at a scenario potentially where the Pac-12 doesn't start on time, the Big 10 and Big 12 do, perhaps the ACC doesn't start on time because we know New York has been a hotbed, although they've been declining in numbers now for quite some time. As far as we know, the Iowa athletes are supposed to get back to practice June 1st. That's what we've been told. June 1st is the day, and I haven't seen anything to contradict that. There's been a lot of scenarios tossed out there. Do you miss four games? You start up in October and you play an eight-game schedule or a nine-game schedule, eliminate the non-conference, just play your conference season. Do you potentially just push the whole season back a month? Or do you move the whole season to spring and play it starting in late January, playing through April? All of these scenarios are on the table. Kirk Ferentz has expressed some, at least, questioning of the spring scenario. But I've heard it from a lot of perspectives that that's a very, very plausible scenario, that we have college football in the spring. I don't love that. Obviously, I'd love to. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait for college football in the spring. But that's better than canceling the season. Am I right?
Right.
So we've got these scenarios. We don't know where, you know, Mark Emmert, the NCAA commissioner, I guess you'd call him, president. He's at the helm of a lot of these things. But all these schools have to agree on these things. You've got head coaches. You've got athletic directors, you've got league commissioners, you've got the NCAA. So, you know, and then you have the College Football Playoff Committee that oversees the actual playoff. It's not an NCAA sponsored postseason like college basketball and many of the other sports are. So what do you make of all this, Noah, as far as college football starting on time? We don't know. Again, I know we're speculating. What's the most likely scenario you see at this point, knowing what we know now about the virus?
Knowing what we know now, it's difficult to say because we still don't really have enough information to make a solid decision or a solid guess as to what's going to happen. Personally, I think if they don't start it up right away, as they normally do, like you said, getting back into the flow of things over the summer and then getting ready for the season as fall hits, then it's probably going to be the whole spring idea, which is going to be weird, but like you said, it's better than not having it at all. So if that's what it comes to, we'll have to accept it.
And it might actually be better for the NCAA to have their season in the spring. There have been plenty of professional leagues that have tried to take the drought of football that occurs after the Super Bowl and capitalize on it, like the XFL, the USFL, the XFL.
Which is all gone now, right?
The XFL.
The XFL is not returning, am I correct?
They actually sold the rights to all of their team names and branding in a auction just recently, and nobody knows for sure what's going to come of the league, but it's technically not dead. The league has been sold to another owner, so we'll see what he does with it. I don't know. That's what happened.
But anyways, the moral of his story is there is a gap. There has been a gap there for forever, like you were talking about in the spring months. There's no major things going on other than the NBA playoffs. So right at
the end of the NBA season, even.
Right. So in that time period, you know, February, March, April, May, that's prime viewership right there because there's not much else going on. If it does come to that they play in the spring.
But there's so many logistic issues to that, if you think about it. you're going to be overlapping with college basketball, and I know you guys aren't massive college basketball.
I watch March Madness. Followers. That's about it.
But you're overlapping with all of that if you do this. You're overlapping with March Madness. You're overlapping with the season. You're overlapping with spring sports and other winter sports that I know maybe we don't care about as much. Alex, where do you see this thing heading?
Honestly, I'm going to refrain from predicting anything because I don't feel like I've gotten any better idea on where this is headed recently. But what I would say is I do think that I would rather see a spring season just for the simple fact that if we have a fall season, I kind of foresee that being a fanless environment. You know what I'm saying? And if it happens in the fall, if it does happen in the fall, I have a feeling that we're still going to be probably not able to get together to watch games. So, you know, like the idea of myself watching a game in my room by myself isn't really that attractive. I'd rather hold off and watch it, you know, six months later.
So you're saying you don't think things are going to get to a point in September? Now, here we go with where I totally disagree with you on this. You don't think things are going to get to a point in September where you can have groups of four or five gathering together?
I don't know. It's four months from now.
At the same time, that
might be right when the virus starts to pick back up. It depends on what happens over the summer. Really.
But Alex, you seem to have a very negative viewpoint to this. You don't. You really don't think we're going to get to a point in September where we can have groups of people watching TV together?
Well, I mean, to me, the group size thing that they did early on was totally ridiculous. Like, well, you have to limit to what was it, 100 or less, and then 10 or less. That was such garbage, and it was totally thrown out right away where you figured out that when you have 10 people, or let's say 100 people, one sick person can spread it to every one of them. So those numbers, you either have to – it's kind of black and white. You either have to limit gatherings altogether or not, and – I don't know. I mean, I really do hope that everything comes back by this fall, but I don't know. I just if it comes down to not having fans at games and not being able to watch games with other people, I really don't care about keeping the fall season.
Okay, but those are two different things. You're comparing not being able to watch games with a few other people and not having fans. We're talking a difference of 70,000 people crowded into a stadium and two Krukos and myself, you watching a football game.
There was a solution that someone came up with. They found a way to pump audio into the stadium. And
you know what?
Like,
there are foreign soccer
through Zoom and all
there
that
are
stuff.
Foreign soccer leagues. There are foreign soccer leagues who are doing CGI fans. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
They're planning on doing CGI fans. Now, you tell me your thoughts on this. Micaiah, go.
CGI fans, good work, but you need actual fan, like audio responses to these things. The graphics of the fan being in the stadium, not so big. When you think about the stadium as a whole, there's actually not that much that you can see, like from the field or even on a broadcast that you can see. Of the people in the stands, yeah, you're going to lose a little bit of that in-arena atmosphere, but if you can get the audio, the reaction, and that kind of thing onto the field, that's the really important thing for those athletes as they perform on that surface, because the fans have a major impact on what goes on in a professional sports environment.
That's why they call it home field advantage, is that having the fans there to cheer the team on. And yes, it's better for the viewers than it is for the players, but from a viewership standpoint, it would probably help, even if it is just a little bit cheesy, I think.
Now, you might not be able to make it to the game, but if you can watch the game, you probably wouldn't notice a difference, as long as they were getting audio from real fans, maybe through Zoom or whatever means they might be using. Maybe it's just piped in, recorded audio. That's probably not the best, because it's not going to feel quite as organic in response to something.
But again, it's still better than nothing.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. And even just having some kind of sport is better than nothing. You're not going to be able to be at the event unless you're media that covers the event. But still,
why does the media need to be at the event?
To cover the game.
Why can't... Okay, but come on. Let's talk about necessary people. The media being at the game is at the bottom of the necessary list.
Players, the media can cover, staff, they can, then media.
Fans. Fans come before media. The media can cover the game from home. That's what they're. I mean, they're doing all their press conference over Zoom and video teleconference.
Like, I don't 99% of fans are not at the game. They're at home. That's the important thing, is getting the people at home who are stuck because they can't get to the game because of the pandemic.
And it's TV revenue. Right. But I let's go around the panel. I just want to ask a couple questions. I don't want explanations. I want a yes or a no. Okay? So no, well, it's a complicated issue. And no, we're predicting. As of May 19th, and we can go back to this later. By the first game, I think it's August 30th or August 31st, is the first Iowa game that's scheduled. Will restrictions – well, I shouldn't say that. Let me rephrase this. Will things be safe enough for small groups of fans like us to watch football games together? Let's go around the panel. Basically, beginning of September. Micaiah, or no?
Yes.
Noah.
I'd say probably yes.
Alex. Really? Because you were the naysayer like 20 seconds ago.
But for small fans, like talking about us, a group of four or five people in a small controlled environment?
I don't understand the difference between a big group and a small group.
Talking 30 fans at Buffalo Wild Wings, 10 fans in your mother's basement.
Let me explain, because Alex doesn't understand the difference between 70,000 and 7. It's about a difference of 69,993.
Roughly.
Okay. But how does that affect social distancing?
It doesn't affect social distancing. It affects.
I stand in the kitchen. Noah stands in the bathroom. Corey stands in the hallway, and you sit on the couch.
No, listen. In all reality, it's less of a chance of infection. It's less community spread is what it is. Listen, you're going to social distance. Now, I'm not saying...
People are doing that right now. Like, just because there's social distancing enforcement, people are supposed to stay at home, doesn't mean that they are staying at home. People are meeting in groups of 5 to 7, 10, whatever, just doing that just because they feel like they can. Even though you're not supposed to, they're still doing that. It's not really going to increase the spread of the virus. If you have people coming over to your house for 10
persons. Well, here's the thing. What I'm saying is you have 7 people. You have that. Compare that to 70,000, you have an exponential more of a chance of catching a virus. Yeah. I mean, imagine just the number of people that you rub up against getting to your seat. And with it being this communicable, I just think it's balance, and I know Alex and I don't see eye to eye on this, but I just think at some point things are going to get to a point where we're going to still be social distancing in a way. I think social distancing right now, we look at that term and we think, well, you can't get within 6 feet of somebody. Masks, gloves, all that. Listen, at some point, maybe still masks. I think masks are okay for a while, right? But at some point, we're going to be just – people are going to have to realize that you have to wash your hands more frequently. We don't need to shake everybody's hand. Everybody that you see, you don't need to give them a hug. You don't need to kiss them on the cheek. You don't need to stand right next to them and be a close talker. You don't need to do that.
Things are ever going to go back to what we thought was normal before pandemic.
But what I'm saying is those are basic measures we should have always been taking, and I think now people are going to realize, hey, I probably should wash my hands more. I should probably use hand sanitizer more. You know, this is this idea that if you give yourself vaccines and you kill things that are on your hands, that you're lowering your immunity. You're not lowering your immunity. You're protecting yourself from viruses and bacteria. Now, I don't want to have a scientific debate about this, but what I'm saying, Alex, is you have a much smaller chance of infection. All of us have a chance of infection because all of us have to go to the grocery store at some point. We are going to get something from the outside world. We all have, and I don't care how much social distancing you do, it's about lowering the risk.
Well, if it lasts for 3 days on a surface, not every single contact surface is going to get sanitized within every three-day period. So you're going to get exposed at some point. The question is how your body is going to handle that and just limiting exposure to yourself so that you can get over that without ever realizing that you're sick and risking someone else that you know and are close to getting sick as well.
And let's remember, the people that have died from this are majority older. Majority are older.
Or those with that already had health problems.
Right. I'm not trying to minimize this. I'm just saying there is a difference between 70,000 fans jam-packed in a stadium and seven people watching a game on TV. And that's why I'm asking the question. Do you think that in September that we'll all be comfortable watching a game together? And Alex, you still haven't answered the question. If you had to guess. No, yeah, it's a yes or a no, by the way. Mikhail, like that.
You got a maybe out of that. There's yes, there's no. Alex is here.
He's going movie. With my realistic mind, I say no.
He might be if right.
If I was going with my positive mindset, I'd say yes.
I mean, we don't know.
You're saying,
but
Alex, you're saying in 4.5 months, we'll have basically made no more progress than we've made now.
Well, here's my...
That's what you're saying, because... That's what you're saying, because that basically means we're at a standstill.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this is what I foresee. I'm hoping, my positive part of my mind is hoping that something is going to break here, and I think possibly maybe that this virus is a lot more widespread than it looks like, which I really hope is true, because that would mean that a lot more people are immune to it than we think, which I think is a good possibility. That would be my positive mindset. My negative or more realistic part of my mind goes to, okay, we're reopening everything. The trends I'm seeing are more like leveling off rather than going down. Even if you go down, I think there definitely is some decreasing going on in different places. I have a feeling you're going to bottom out, but not totally be able to shut it down enough that the risk is going to be gone. I don't think, Corey, I don't think you're arguing that, but I just don't see,
I
don't see the difference. So let's say you have an infection rate of like 0.5, let's say 0.5 in a city. I don't see how that's really different in how you treat it versus if you have an infection rate of 5%.
Okay, but here's what we've got to understand. When the numbers are contained, Or we don't have to. You're not looking to eliminate it. The flu is not eliminated, but we don't shut down everything for a year because we're scared of it. We don't do that. You don't do that, right?
Well, to be fair, though,
the ability of the disease and to be clear, spread itself.
To be clear, this we're not talking. This is not politics. We're not have anything. It's not anything to do with politics. This is just. We're talking logistics. Of course, the political world wants to make it into politics. And of course, you know, we're not getting involved with that. But my point is you don't shut everything down for a year for the flu.
But that's a different thing. What you said is not totally true. The flu is eliminated every year, but it changes.
It's not eliminated. People still get it every year. People die from it every year.
It's a different flu. It's not the same virus as year to year.
But the point is the flu virus is still there.
Person to person.
Yeah, but it's different. It might as well be a totally different thing.
But we don't shut it down. It doesn't matter. The virus is still there. It's killing people. It's a strain of the flu, and we don't shut things down for it.
The point, though, is, okay, you know that flu is
a different strain.
You know that virus is going to mutate in 6 months or less. This one, if you stomp it out, it might not mutate enough for it to come back.
First of all, it's already
mutated.
Doesn't
mean it's measles or malaria. Malaria.
What are you talking about, Mike?
I don't think he even knows.
Malaria. It's a disease
we lost a thing and is not so much a thing anymore.
Or
we lost Micaiah because he's thinking about having to play basketball in July.
I want to play basketball. I've lost 30 pounds so that I could play basketball so much better. Here I am, 30 pounds lighter, sitting in a chair.
I think Alex has made it clear. I think Alex has made it clear he ain't playing basketball this year at all. Because if he thinks we can't watch a game in September, then you're not going to be banging bodies out at Riverview in July. All right?
I have bodies no more. I don't have the body for that anymore. I'm down two shirt sizes. Yeah. Look at me. There's nothing of me left. Yeah,
you have to remember, you're still heavier than basically everybody else on the court.
I know.
Except for me. Just saying.
Noah, how about you chime in on this?
Do you have anything to say, even?
Not really.
Okay. Well, my point is, you still haven't, Alex, you still haven't answered the question. We don't we don't shut everything down for the flu. And I'm not saying that the whole stay-at-home thing was – I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. But I'm saying at some point you have to recognize there's risk. Living in this world of disease and imperfection and all the crap there's risk involved. There's risk involved.
Well, okay.
And
so by that logic,
don't shut
now,
everything
why not just,
down.
Why not just start playing basketball right now?
Because we're still trying to flatten the curve and send it down. Okay. This is a outbreak of a new illness. So what I'm saying is once we get to a point where the numbers are down and things seem to be leveling off, you can open things, you get back to somewhat of a normal. I'm not saying it's ever going to return to the same it was before. What is going on?
I just saved my guy. That is the noisiest interruption I have ever heard in this podcast.
How do I mute Micaiah? Okay.
Yeah,
but my point is you just don't shut everything down.
Well, I think we've seen that, shutting stuff down was kind of everything down like some places did early on was kind of, they figured out that, basically that wasn't a good idea. And now we're saying, we need to, have a different approach to it. Because, early on, you had certain places that were completely shutting down and it didn't get rid of it. And if you can't completely contain it in an area, there's only mitigating it and there's no reason to shut everything down. So, you are definitely partially right as far as, taking precautions. I just don't see being able to maintain basic social distancing, doing a lot, like you said, sitting around a living room or playing basketball. I mean, it would have to get to a point that I just don't see it getting to until we have a vaccine or if this goes a different way than I'm thinking, which is possible. But I just think like it has to be pretty much gone for you to be going
it's
hard.
It's not going to be gone, though. It's not going to be gone even with a vaccine.
Oh,
because
I think
it's already mutated. It's already changed. It's going to
Mutating, all viruses mutate, but it depends on
right.
The vaccine doesn't necessarily be ineffective against the new mutated strain. It's only if it mutates enough for it to be ineffective. And it so far, we don't have a vaccine, but there's no evidence to suggest that it'll be like the flu. Hopefully, it's not like the flu because that would be the you know, worst case scenario, but I don't think it will be. We haven't seen that with the previous SARS strain. I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that. So I think once we get a vaccine, if we get a good one, I think it will pretty much eradicate it. Because once you get down to just a couple people are getting it, you know, maybe in bigger cities you'll have a small outbreaks, but it's not going to be able to be spread from that. You know, you're going to be able to contain it, I think.
Something more like what happens with a cold and flu season, where it just kind of comes around every now and then, and there's a small outbreak, and then it goes back down.
Yeah, but the difference there is that stuff continually mutates to the point where there's no vaccine that can cover it year to year. Hopefully that's not the case of this thing, because that will be a big problem. But I don't think that's going to happen. I know what you're saying about it popping up. I think that obviously would only happen to people who don't have the antibodies. So you're getting smaller and smaller numbers of people that are susceptible if there's a vaccine that's, you know, widely spread. And I think it could step it out if it's effective.
Okay. And I know there's conspiracy theorists that say, well, the numbers aren't accurate. Alex, do you know the numbers? Do you know how many people are in Story County?
No.
We're sitting at about 100,000. 100,000. Do you know how many? And we have a university here. You've got Burke, which is a meat plant. We've got Barilla. We've got 3M, Hawk. We've got, some major manufacturing companies. We have, and now I can't think of the Danfoss. We used to be called Sauer Danfoss. We've got some major companies that bring in a lot of people from other countries. Out of the 100,000 people, guess how many, again, that have been reported and confirmed. How many cases do you think we have in Story County?
I think you guys are pretty low. I'm not sure what it is.
64.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys have done very well for whatever reason.
But what I'm saying is, okay, 64 cases out of 100,000 people, and we're gonna keep everything shut down the rest of the year.
You guys are not indicative of the majority of the state, even let alone the country.
Well, yeah, we are indicative of the majority.
Guess how many
of the state.
Cases Marshall County has.
Marshall County is not indicative of the rest of the state. Tama County is not indicative. You're giving me outliers. Look at a map. Look at a map of the coronavirus numbers in the state, and the majority are not what Tama County and Marshall County and Jasper County are, or Polk County. Or
what you got to consider. Okay, there's only a few big population centers in Iowa, and Polk,
right.
Blackhawk, and Cedar Rapids, whatever those counties are the ones that have been hit. And then you have Sioux City, whatever county that is, and Marshall County that have been, for whatever reason, hit hard.
Well, but I can tell you why. The only reason is because of Lenox, JBS, and then in Tama, it's because of Iowa beef. You take those away, there's no outbreak. There's no outbreak.
Yeah, but Iowa is like one of the last states, other than maybe Wyoming, that's going to get infected to that degree. It's about the states on the coastline specifically, or those with large population centers like Chicago or Detroit.
We're talking about Iowa. We're talking about being able to gather and play basketball, watch games in Iowa. We're not talking about living in New York.
Yeah,
we're not talking about
being able to play basketball at Riverview, but that doesn't mean that major sports pieces.
But that's not what we're talking about.
Especially like in a big city, you won't be able to.
We are talking about. Alex is saying that we hear. He doubts that we here will be able to do those things. And that's what I keep coming back to. And I'm not saying that Marshall County has been, because of the meatpacking plants, unfortunately, it's been a breeding zone for this crap, as has Tama County. Tama County's been ravaged. I mean, I don't know if you know the numbers. They've been ravaged.
Yeah, I heard it was bad.
It's ridiculous. There's nobody lives in Tama County. There's nothing going on in Tama County.
But they can't shut down the meatpacking plant by government federal law, and that's where most of the disease is coming from, is from that plant. At least last I heard.
So,
yeah, and JBS won't admit how many cases they have. They did at one point, but for the past month they haven't
said anything. And then today, I don't know if it was today, but just recently we had a guy that worked there die. So that's definitely the meatpacking plants are a real problem, but it's, you know, part of the food industry. So,
and by the way, of the 64 cases in Story County, 39 have recovered.
Yeah, you guys are definitely not, you have not been hit hard.
And then we've had one death. And I'm not, listen, I'm not trying to downplay those who have been infected or those who have died. There's a lot of people who have gotten infected and they barely even know they have it, barely even notice the symptoms. And I don't know. I guess we're just playing the speculation game at this point. I think all of us disagree, but if we had, for the record, normalcy is going to, I'm not saying it's not going to come back in the fall or winter, but my prediction was by July, the majority of people will feel comfortable getting together, playing basketball, things like that. That's my, I'm on the record, Micaiah. July.
Is that the end of July?
July 1st.
First of July.
That's my prediction. I could be way off. But July 1st
is over
my prediction.
A month away.
That's fairly
confident.
A month
and,
but it's not.
It's, no, it's not. It's nearly.
Point.
It's nearly 6 weeks away.
Yeah, that's just over a month.
We've only been involved with this pandemic for a little over two months.
I know.
That's what people are like, oh, we're going to be in this for years. We've only been involved with this for less than. We've been involved with this for a little over 2 months. New York has seen their curve go spiking up and come soaring down within these 2 months. And you're telling me that we're not going to see major changes in 6 weeks?
Well, here's what I think about
that.
I'm hoping, this is my positive side talking. I'm hoping that, like I said earlier, that a lot more people are walking around right now with antibodies than we have any reason to think. And so, in other words, if you were to give out antibody tests to every person in this country, I'm hoping that the rate of people who are immune to it is drastically higher than what the infection rate has been. So I think that could be possible. That might explain why we're seeing, you know, bigger drops in areas that got hit harder earlier, like New York. Because, I mean, there's definitely other factors in play, like those people are much more scared, obviously, and are taking more precautions than somewhere like, say, Story County or Marshall County, Iowa. So there are other factors, but I'm hoping that there's a lot more people that are resistant to this than we know of, and that could very well be the case. And hopefully, if that is the case, I could see a much more sooner reopening of everything. So
raise your hand, or I guess. Since I can't see everybody's hands, let me know who thinks that my prediction of July 1st is unreasonable. So, what are we debating?
Put my hand up?
Okay,
I think it's optimistic, but I don't think it's unreasonable.
Noah, go ahead.
I'm kind of agreeing with Micaiah and what he said. It's not, I wouldn't call it unreasonable, but it is definitely on the optimistic side to me.
So Alex, are you just saying that are you saying, I'm not saying that they're making the right decision, but the university football players are planning on being back to practice to some degree by June 1st.
Okay.
So,
I mean,
is that stupid then? I mean,
I don't see, like, I just don't picture it. So are they playing in normal everything, or they're wearing masks? What's the deal here?
I don't think so. I think they're going to try to get people tested more. Last I knew, they're going to try to up testing. Let me read you the latest report.
So basically, they're trying to go for a little bit more of the bubble method, as I've heard it called, where they're
USA
trying to keep them somewhat separated to try and protect them.
Iowa football president Bruce Harrell told the Iowa Board of Regents back on May 1st, just a little over a couple weeks ago, that we'll be able to get back. We hope to get back to normally what we're going to do by June 1st. to start of football practices. The Regents asked whether the Hawkeyes could play without fans in the stands. Harold said, if we got to the worst of the worst, would we let the players play with no fans? I don't know, but if we're at this stage with the virus, we'd have to do a lot of testing on the individual players. I'm not going to go yes or no on that. I'm going to refer to the experts, but right now, June 1st is the date we're going to get back to practice.
Right, and that's Harold's the biggest the problem with here with all of this, is making sure everybody gets tested, having enough tests to go around to not only test these players and everybody around them, like coaching staff, but to test them regularly so that if one person gets infected, you don't end up infecting the entire team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is just one person on that field is infected, they're spreading it to everybody.
But they're not spreading it to everybody. They're spreading it to everybody on the team. If they're still social distancing within it, they're not. Everybody on the team, they're healthy 18 to 22-year-olds.
Right, but they're getting it, even if they don't have
what?
So then if they don't know they have it right away.
I mean, listen, I shouldn't say so what. But the point is, if everybody's tested originally and they social distance from everybody else, it's just like people in your family. You're all on the same schedule. You're not exposing yourself to outside sources. You're not going to get – your chance of getting infected is very low. That's what I'm saying. And say an infection does happen, I don't think that means you have to shut down the whole season. You don't have to shut down practice. You isolate that person. You test everybody else, and you deal with it. Exposure doesn't mean you're going to die. Exposure just means you're exposed, and potentially you could have been in contact with the virus. But again – just like the flu, just like the – I'm not saying it's the same thing, but for exposure for a lot of these young people means very little.
Okay, so to cut in what you were saying there about it being like your household, for that to be true, you would have to basically have the team spending time together and not going home, because then they're – you know, they'd have to basically live together for that to be the same situation.
Right, and that's the problem, because how long are these guys going to be stuck together? Away from their families.
But they're already away from their families. They're in school. they're away from their families all year.
I mean, it definitely could be done. But they would have to essentially treat it as if, like I said, they were in the same household, which, you know.
All I'm saying is I don't think July – I'm going back to the same thing. I'm not trying to downplay – you don't want to risk anybody's health, but what I'm saying is, right now, I agree. Right now, no, we're not ready for it. I don't know. June 1st seemed a little optimistic to me, even, but at some point, if the numbers keep going down, you get back to normal, at least some form of normal. That doesn't mean the risk is eliminated. You're still going to have risk, but we live in this world of risk, okay? And again, I'm not trying to sound insensitive or downplay the issue. I'm just saying, if we can get to that point where the risk is minimal, I think you get back to normal. But we'll just have to wait and see on it.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you have risk, but the difference of this type of thing is it varies among different age groups so much that.
Well, and that's why I'm a proponent. I am a proponent that nursing homes should probably not open for the rest of the year. In fact, I don't know that they should open for the next – well, I don't know. I don't think they should open for the rest of the year, I'll tell you that. I think people in retirement communities should be urged to stay home. Things like that. I'm all for that. But – this is not a political thing at all, and we've made that very clear, but at some point, everybody else, they're going to get back to some form of normal routine. Some form of normal routine.
And once things start to come back to normal in some respects, people are going to want things to come back to normal in every respect, which is another thing.
That's true, but I don't know. You got to protect your elderly population. You've got to protect your elderly population. You've got to protect those who have a compromised immunity. So those are – I'm trying to emphasize that I'm not advocating, you know, just starting to expose everybody to it. But I'm just saying be balanced, be reasonable, and understand that there's risk with everything, and recognize the risk and deal with it accordingly. If they say we're not going to play football till spring, so be it. I won't be happy, but I'll tell you what I'll be more upset about, and this leads us into our second half of our what we're going to talk about. I'll be more unhappy if they say college basketball is not happening. Because, Alex, this team next year has a chance. By many pollsters, they've already ranked Iowa in the top 10. Some have ranked in the top 7. There have been a couple national pundits who have said their black horse to win the national championship next year could be Iowa. I know these are all, you know, kind of crazy thoughts at this point, and it's never happened. These kind of expectations have never happened in Iowa history. A lot of it is going to hinge on Luka Garza's decision to enter the NBA draft or not. But Jordan Bohannon had his waiver approved. He made it very clear to the Des Moines Register this past week that he is staying at Iowa. He had thought about transferring, apparently, at one point as a graduate transfer. He's said he's staying at Iowa. Jack Nungy had a hardship waiver, so he's going to be a double redshirt sophomore. We know Patrick McCaffrey, we're waiting on a decision on his medical hardship waiver. Either way, whether he's a freshman or sophomore, he'll be back next year. We're being told he's gained double-digit pounds. He's up over 200 now for the first time in his life. Joe Toussaint's a year older. C.J. Frederick's back and healthy. Joe Wieskamp said he's not entering his name in the draft. He's going to stay here at Iowa at least another year. The only decision we're waiting on is Luka Garza. And if Garza comes back, he's preseason National Player of the Year by virtually everybody. And Iowa is going to be a preseason top 10 by virtually everybody's standards. So that will be the biggest. I mean, obviously, I don't want to miss college football. But if somehow college basketball was interrupted again, it will be the most, if Garza comes back especially, it will be the most devastating thing to happen to Iowa basketball in its history. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the biggest, you know, waste of potential for sure. I mean, even just losing this past postseason is probably the biggest letdown of all time as far as what I can think of. But, yeah, that would be just piling on top of that.
What do you think about Garza? I know that, Makai, I know you guys aren't as avid Iowa basketball followers. But from what you guys know about Garza, and of course you're more NBA gurus, he's got his name in the draft pool right now. He can retract his name. They've extended the deadline, I think, to June 15th, I want to say now. And it could be extended beyond that, depending on what the NBA draft ends up doing, whether they push that back or not. We know the lottery is pushed back. But there's no combine. So Garza's got a little under a month to make this decision. I think, my personal opinion is, he's going to make a decision within the next 2 weeks. That's what I think. There was an article this week that was published, I believe, by a local news outlet that basically had talked to Garza, and Garza said he was not close to making a decision. He's still got meetings with teams over Zoom, and he'll make his decision following those meetings. But he's basically come out and said he's not going anywhere unless he's guaranteed a roster spot. I personally don't see that happening. I don't see a team saying, we guarantee we're going to draft you in the second round, or we guarantee we have a spot. A lot of guys who get drafted in the second round don't get a roster spot. Aaron White, former Iowa Hawkeye, perfect example. A guy who got drafted by the Washington Wizards, has never played a minute in the NBA because he's been overseas his entire career. Where do you two, Makaya, Noah, where do you guys see Luka Garza as far as a projection at the next level? And if you had to make a prediction, does he leave this year or does he come back?
Well, it's hard to say. I know this draft class isn't exactly top-tier stuff. I've heard that from many different people. But how many years has he played college basketball? I don't know.
He'd be entering his fourth year, so he just finished his third. He played as a true freshman.
Well, in that case, if I was him, I would say, you know, if I wasn't maybe a top 40, 35, 40 draft board kind of player, I might consider just dropping. I don't know what's going on in his mind, obviously, but that's what I would do, because with that much more time to develop your talent, there's a chance for you to really show out, especially on a national stage, because you didn't get that chance this last spring with the cancellation of March Madness. What might he be able to do on that kind of stage? Maybe he really shows out and Iowa makes a Sweet 16 run or whatever. And that could really boost his draft stock and the money that he gets and all of that stuff. But, you know, that's all kind of stuff to consider. But I'm not him. And holding yourself out of the NBA draft an extra year has a tendency to drop your draft stock. Just because
but he doesn't have a draft. He doesn't really have a draft stock, though.
Not right now. Right. It sounds like a borderline do they, don't they draft him kind of player.
And that's something I found doing a little bit of research. I found an article on, it says in the corner, Hawkeye Insider. I've never heard of it, but I'll trust it. Apparently on CBS Big Board, he ranked 98 out of 100. And if you go by the fact that 60 players get drafted and not even all of those players make NBA teams, like Corey mentioned earlier.
Well, you have to be top 50 to make an NBA team.
Or have so much promise that they'll keep you around.
Like Isaiah Thomas.
Now, he obviously has some skills, but at this point, is it enough for him to be guaranteed a spot on an NBA team? Like Corey said, right now his draft stock is, from what I can tell, next to non-existent. So if I were in his position, knowing what little I know about it, I would say he probably comes back. And I know Corey will be happy to hear that.
Alex, what are your thoughts on the Garza decision?
I mean, I'm pretty much along the same line of thought. I mean, I don't see him, if his criteria truly is what he says, I just don't see him leaving. I don't know what more to say. I mean, I don't think he's valued highly enough right now. I think he knows that him and his dad both know that he has more potential athletically. I think he does anyway. That would really help his draft stock for next year and stuff that the NBA tends to value more than college. So I personally don't think he's leaving.
Is there any way that a team offers him a guarantee that he can't turn down, Noah?
That's difficult to say. He has some statistical things that have been seen by very few players in recent history. So he might, but he's gone far enough under the radar that I don't think it's likely. That's how I'll put it. It's possible, but I don't think it's likely.
Does he have a 3-point shot?
Well, it's funny you say that.
That's where the NBA is right now.
Alex, I thought he was really good from three last year.
What was his percentage?
Noah's on it.
Yeah, look up 3-point percentage, Garza.
Low
30s. I'm trying to find. You remember seeing his sky hooks that he was making, Alex?
Yeah.
In practice, making them with left, right. And Luke, Frank Garza, his dad, also posted some video of Luka expanding his range, and he was knocking down threes from 28 feet. So, I mean, the kid obviously is a hard worker. I mean, okay. I don't know.
Which one do you want first? Field goal percentage or 3-point percentage?
3-point percentage.
36% on 3.5 attempts a game.
From college, that's probably closer to 30% in the NBA, which is all right.
Here's something that I have heard.
for how a shooting touch transfers from college to NBA, they usually look more at free throw percentage than just their 3-point percentage. And he's about, for his time at Iowa, a 70% free throw shooter. So average. So he doesn't have amazing touch. It's not a guarantee that he will be a great shooter, but he definitely has shown the ability to stretch the floor, at least to a certain extent. And in an NBA system, he probably could translate that, at least to a certain extent.
I thought his three-point shot was really good last year. I know one thing that, and I don't know if it was John Rothstein or who it was, but did a special on
Newhouse is amazing.
Except
all
Nash
of the Iowa, or not all the Iowa guys, but
at least Geico makes bundling our home and car insurance
easy. Hold on a second,
easy.
I got all kinds of stuff. You hear that?
For bundling,
just close it. Close it, Corey.
I'm not. I don't want to close it. Can you see my screen right now?
Yes, I can.
You have to be able to play man-to-man.
What's going on? All right, I guess
we got some Southerner talking about basketball.
I don't know what's
going on. Able to play man-to-man defense.
Okay, I guess we'll end that experiment. I do want to share with something with you guys, whether we think Garza is ready or not.
You're getting copyright struck for that 2 seconds of round and round, by the way.
Come on. Okay, here we go. Here's what Nicholas Bear was asked what his thoughts on Iowa this next year with Garza coming back were. Of course, an Iowa former Iowa player who played with all of these guys, virtually everybody. Here's what Nicholas Bear had to say on Iowa's prospects next year.
They have a lot of talent coming back. You know, Jordan coming back off injury. You know, Jack Nungi, Patrick Caffrey, and that's already adding to a really, you know, special core group. So I think that's something that I'm really excited about just as an Iowa fan. When you look at just potential matchup problems that they're going to cause other teams and, you know, depending on what Luka decides to do, you know, that'll have a big impact as well. But I think either way, like, I really enjoyed watching them this year, and I think next year they're going to be really special. So I think, you know, sky's the limit. I mean, I think they can go Final Four, absolutely. I mean, I think when you look at the experience they have, you know, how deep they are, and, you know, just that special core group that they have, I don't think there's a team that you can throw up against that they can't beat. So I think they can beat anybody, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to watching them. They have a lot of talent coming back.
Oh, stop talking,
Jordan coming
Nicholas.
Back off in.
All right. All of our technical glitches aside, what are your thoughts, Alex, on Bears evaluation? Of course, he's a homer. We get that. But he knows all these guys. He made a point of mentioning a guy that we really haven't seen much of since his freshman year, who we're being told, we keep being told over and over and over again, that Jack Nungi's a totally different player than he was as a freshman, and he's gotten hurt, of course, this past year. But these guys are, you know, he knows who these guys are. He knows the potential of Jack Nungi, the potential of Patrick McCaffrey. These are guys that we haven't really been able to see, at least over the past year. What are your thoughts on his assessment of Iowa's chances with Garza back next year?
I mean, I think he's being very optimistic. You know, Final Four is a pretty big jump. But, you know, I don't think he's terribly far off. I mean, if I had to guess, I wouldn't have a problem with somebody saying Elite Eight or Sweet 16 or so. But, you know, Final Four is probably like, I don't know. It just seems pretty optimistic. But I think there definitely is probably the most potential we've seen in a year coming, with players coming back the next year that I can remember, considering we don't really know what would have happened this year. We can only speculate. Let's say we assume that they would have made, you know, a little noise in the tournament at least, but it's hard to say. I think that that's a little bit optimistic to say, but
if Garza comes back, would you agree that this is Iowa's most stacked roster in Fran's era as head coach?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And if you look at this roster, you got Joe Toussaint, who I think is a budding star. Jack Nungi at one point. And again, I'm going to sound like a homer, as I always do. But Jack Dungy's a guy that Fran McCaffrey was talking about last year as maybe being the second best player on the team behind either Wieskamp or Garza. Jordan Bohannon is the all-time school leader in three-point field goals, has a chance to break the Big Ten record in three-point field goals. You lose Evelyn, but you get C.J. Frederick back, who averaged double digits in points last year as a redshirt freshman despite battling injuries all year. Joe Wieskamp was a preseason All-Big Ten player last year and ended up having a good year. I think he was second-team All-Big Ten. Ryan Creener's gone. Riley Till's gone. But you get Patrick McCaffrey back, who was a four-star recruit heading into last year before having to shut it down due to complications after his cancer treatment. Connor McCaffrey led the nation in assist-to-turnover ratio last year as kind of a point forward. We know Pemsel's transferring out of the program, but he had very few minutes last year. He's going to Virginia Tech. And then, of course, the big man on campus, Luca Garza, who is an absolute beast. And then you add in five new guys, one guy from the East Coast, Josh Ogundele. He's 6'10", big boy. We've talked about him. What were your thoughts on that big boy when we've showed it to, when we've shown you pictures of him, Noah?
Well, I see you're pulling up the picture. Oh yes, now I remember this guy.
That's
that looks
a big
like the kind
boy.
Of guy that you put as a traffic cone under, you know, right in the middle of the paint, and nobody scores on him.
Alex.
I think you already know what I said, but he looks like a bull.
Well, so you're not excited about him coming here?
I didn't say that.
Don't you think they need a guy like this? When do they ever get a big – I mean, Garza's big, but when do they ever just get a Michigan State
type? He's 6'11", 260. He's pretty big, but that's Luca Garza. He's pretty big, but –
he's not quite big enough, though.
Okay, but come on. Look at this big boy. All I'm saying,
he's more of a, he looks like more of a bull. Like somebody like Charles Barkley is actually bigger than a guy who's quite a bit taller than him and maybe weighs more. That's what this guy looks like. He's more of a
Zion Williamson
bull. Right. So, he looks like the type who's going to play even slightly bigger than his size would indicate.
So he'll play like he's 7'3" instead of being 6'11".
It's hard to know. I haven't really seen much as far as his athleticism, but it's possible.
So well, I think the interesting thing is about Ogundele.
What's that?
He's actually lighter than Garza. Same size. He's lighter.
But keep in mind, he's in high school. Imagine what he's going to become when he gets in. Now, he probably will lose a little weight. He's going to need to probably lose a little weight once he gets into college to play at the Big Ten level and play up and down like Fran wants him to play. But
are you okay over there? Okay.
I'm going to take five. Y'all continue without me.
Okay.
Oh, we were gonna shut it down without you, Micaiah.
He's gone.
I'll just show you here. You Noah and Alex, you can kind of watch. It's just some brief highlights of this big boy. Of course, we can't play the audio due to copyright issues, but look at that big boy. Look at that big boy dominating inside. You like that, Alex?
See that? It's kind of herky-jerky on my end, but yeah.
See that rim shaking? I don't know.
I'm noticing that at this point, he's basically 2-3 inches taller than everybody else, it feels like.
Yeah.
Now, whether that's actually him or just how he plays, that's probably just actually him.
Well, keep in mind, he's also playing with high schoolers.
Yeah.
But you're going to get him in next year, and I think he's going to play. I really do. I think he's going to play. And then this is a guy, Aaron Ulis.
Is he related?
This is his younger brother. This is Tyler's younger brother coming to Iowa next year. Of course, Tyler was a kid who's in the NBA now, right, Noah?
Right.
And got recruited heavily by Iowa. Iowa had a good chance with him. In fact, I think they were considered the favorites up until the very end. Kentucky stole him from the Hawkeyes, and now he's playing in the NBA. And his younger brother had a good relationship with Fran as well. And from what I read, Tom Kakert of HawkeyeReport.com tweeted this out earlier this week that Tyler Ulis has entered the top 150 players for the 2020 class, and he's ranked now at 109, according to Rivals. And according to Kakert, that's the largest jump of anybody currently in the top 150. So, and again, you're going to jump naturally. Your ranking, your recruiting rankings are going to explode based on committing to a Big Ten school. But as you watch this tape, Noah, and you're familiar with Tyler Ulis, his older brother, a little bit right. smaller than Aaron. Aaron's actually a little bit bigger as far as height. I think Aaron's closer to 6'1", 6'2". I think Tyler's closer to 6 foot, if I'm not mistaken. But Aaron's got some of the same skills. And, you know, what do you see him bringing to a team that's going to have a loaded backcourt, but certainly is going to bring a different dimension?
I'm noticing his creation ability and ability to drive into the lane, and that's always something that you need from a perimeter player, at least one perimeter player on the team, someone that can just split the defense and force a mismatch, force a double, help off the weak side for a kickout. And, you know, he's got a little bit of shooting touch, too. Of course, I'm watching a highlight reel, so he looks amazing, but still.
Right.
Highlight reels are always the best.
This is, you know who we're talking about here, Makai, as you're just jumping back in here with us. This is Tyler Ulis' younger brother, Aaron Ulis, who will be coming to Iowa next year.
I will say this. I have heard of him before this podcast.
Oh, there you go.
So
that's only because of Tyler Ulis, though, right?
Probably.
And here is, I want to just show this for you guys real quick. These are two other big class. First of all, big class coming to Iowa. Ask your dad about Kenyon Murray. He's a guy who played at Iowa in the 90s. Really, really good Iowa basketball player. His sons, Keegan and Chris Murray, twins. They're identical twins. They were in Iowa. I believe they're playing, I think, Cedar Rapids area in high school. Ended up going down to DME Academy in Florida and reclassified. So they got an extra year and really improved. There was talk that they were getting some serious Power 5 offers, because a lot of people have said this class has been kind of a down class. It has not been a class that has excited a whole lot of people. But as the months have gone on, of course, part of it's because they've committed to Iowa. A lot of these recruits are getting more attention. And these are two kids that were getting a lot of attention right before Iowa offered, and they accepted the offer. But this is Keegan and Chris Murray, the identical twins, the kids of former Iowa basketball player Kenyon Murray. And they're both 6'8", 6'9", long. I would consider both of them to be primarily shooters. And I'd say both of them are probably stretch fours, maybe just a big threes. I think Keegan is probably more developed at this stage in his basketball maturity, but they're both very skilled. As you'll notice, I believe it's Keegan is left-handed. His brother, Chris, is right-handed. But made some noise at DME Academy and got some serious interest from Bruce Pearl and Auburn, and along with some other schools, according to some reports. But just adding these guys in, and I don't know that these guys are going to play next year. You can't play everybody. Some guys are going to have to redshirt because you simply can't have a rotation of 13 guys. You're just not going to do that.
Right.
But that's how many scholarship players they have next year. And again, I'm a homer and I'm excited about everybody coming to Iowa. But Makai, what are your thoughts on these two kids? We're going to have to get used to their numbers because we'll confuse them if you just looked at them on the basketball court. But what do you think they can bring, either one of them, if they play this coming year for Iowa?
Well, they definitely look pretty promising. Now, high school, you know, is quite a bit different, but we'll see. It definitely looks like they have plenty of potential. Especially coming in, you're going to have some time unless they just light the college world on fire, which they maybe I have. I'm not an NBA scout. I can't tell you when somebody's going to do that or not. But, you know, they probably have a year or two to develop their skill. And with that, I think they have plenty of potential. These guys look like they'd be pretty solid prospects.
Alex, your thoughts on the Murray twins? I know you've seen some tape of them. And like Noah said, highlight films are one thing. Playing in the Big Ten is totally different. But just your outlook on these guys' skills and what they can bring to France squad.
Alex has left the building.
I'm here.
He has left the building.
I'm going to take a break right after this. But, yeah, it's hard for me to say. They're obviously very skilled in a lot of different ways. It's hard for me to place how they're going to fit in. I mean, just because they seem to be so well-rounded, it's going to be interesting to see how he fits them in. I guess you could kind of think of somebody like Connor, who's, you know, an non-traditional type of player, and, you know, he's able to fit into the lineup pretty well. So it's hard for me to say. I think they'll definitely have an impact, though.
And one thing,
I think they're going to have to go ahead, Noah.
One thing is that you said both of these guys are like 6'7", 6'8", you know, taller wings. Teams are always needing guys like that, that have guard skills, but are a little bit bigger. And they are very valuable at any level of basketball. So if they can continue to develop and develop their skills, and, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think guys who and that their ability to shoot, and there's some people in the Iowa media that all they know about, it feels like all they know about college basketball is you got to be able to shoot. And yeah, that's important. You got to be able to shoot, but there's a lot more to basketball than being able to shoot. But what I'll say about that is these are two guys that can really shoot the basketball. And I agree with you, Noah, when you're 6'8" and you can shoot and you're that long and you can see these kids are long. They've got long wingspans and you can shoot and you've got a relatively quick release. Look at a guy like Jared Utoff, thrived in college. Look at a guy like Aaron White, wasn't even the best shooter, but thrived in college. He was scrappy. Nicholas Bear, kind of the same thing. You know, we hope to see that from Jack Nungey next year. He's a little bit bigger, about 6'11". But as you can see, these guys can really pull it up from three, and that's what probably excites me the most. I don't think both these guys are going to play. In fact, I've said it on record before. I think this five freshman class, I could see three of these guys redshirting. As far as who those may be, I think at least one of these kids are going to redshirt. Maybe Fran wants to keep them in the same class. I don't know. But I could see Keegan and Chris Murray redshirting, get their bodies a little bit more ready for the Big Ten. And, you know, I certainly think they can become Big Ten players. And the great thing about it is we talked about how stacked this class is, or this team is going to be next year if Garza comes back. They're not really going to need many of these freshmen to step up. I think you're probably going to like some spot minutes from at least one of the guards. And I think Ogundele is a guy that be great if you could get some production out of him, because with Pemsel leaving, they could use some spot minutes. I mean, Garza's not going to come off the floor much. But what if Nungey gets hurt again? What if Garza gets hurt? You're going to need guys to be able to fill in there. So,
and if you want to make a deep run, you need to have a deep team. So having these guys that can fill in, either in spot minutes or, like you mentioned, if somebody gets injured, that's very valuable. Because then it's not, well, we were doing good, but we had an injury or three.
And Iowa's done so well, especially this past year, coping with injuries. As we move to this final recruit that we're kind of breaking down here as we finish up our kind of a early preview again, we kind of every month can kind of update our listeners on Iowa basketball. Of course, the Pemsel situation evolved over the past month with him deciding to transfer, which wasn't a total shock. A little bit surprising to me, being that he was an Iowa guy. But this is Tony Perkins. You can see highlights of him. You can see very athletic. He's a two-guard but a kid that I can see.
Just dunked on a guy. And he's got a lot of speed. He's outrunning most of the guys on the floor. Again, what excites me, this is in high school, but, you know, still.
What excites me about him is exactly what you said, Noah. And I'm not talking about just dunk reels, but the fact that he's going up and dunking on people as a two guard in high school. His athleticism, that's to me the most eye-popping thing about him, is his ability to drive and finish through contact.
I will say his shot form needs a little bit of work. He can hit it, but it needs some work.
I think that's the thing with this group is I think besides the Murray twins, I think Aaron and Tony, both of the guards, probably their one knock, both of them, is going to be their shot. I think Aaron's pretty quick. He can create for others, but consistency from three is going to be big. But listen, if anybody's going to be able to help develop a guard's shot, it's going to be Fran McCaffrey and this coaching staff.
Because, by the way, I'll continue when you're done.
No, I was just going to say, you know, they were top five in offensive efficiency last year in the country, and that's with the injuries to Nungy. That's with C.J. Frederick being out a lot. That's with Bohannon being out for half the season. That's with Patrick McCaffrey being out the entire year. So, I just think, you know, the athleticism that Perkins is going to bring, and I do think he's going to bring it. And he can shoot three. I mean, you're seeing him shoot threes.
Right.
I agree.
Even
with
off
you, know,
the dribble,
his
too.
Shots, yeah, his shot's going to need some work. But see the way he kind of slices and dices into the lane, that's something that Iowa has sort of lacked over the years. And even with C.J. Frederick, C.J. Frederick's tremendous off the ball, cutting and you know, back cuts and moving off picks and whatnot. But, you know, you need a guy like this that can kind of bring a different flair to the lineup. And, boy, you could bring Tony Perkins off the bench and maybe he bring you some, you know, maybe it's just 6 points a game, but it's hard defense and athleticism. A guy who, like you said, he'll dunk on you. I think I could see Tony Perkins, Josh Ogundele playing. And, you know, maybe you play Aaron Ulis as well, but backcourt minutes are going to be hard to find with Connor and Bohannon and Joe Toussaint and C.J. Frederick and Joe Wieskamp. They're going to be hard to find. So maybe you redshirt one of those guys, help them develop. Whichever one is ready, you play them. And, you know, maybe you play one of the Murray twins. I just think Fran's got a lot of options right here. And I just think he's got a lot more potential than maybe the rankings for this recruiting class are indicating.
All right, so the thing I wanted to bring up, because you did mention Aaron Ulis again, I did look it up. I didn't realize Tyler Ulis was only 5'8".
Wow. Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
Aaron Ulis is 6'2". Which,
at 6'2", 185 pounds, that's actually decent size for a point guard, especially
Not to change the subject, Noah, but don't you love how on a highlight mixtape we get one of these highlights right here?
The full court chop at the
full court heave. The full court heave and it goes in. Off
yes,
the back.
I'm sure he practices that shot.
Right.
It's part of his arsenal.
Micaiah, what are your thoughts on again, I know it's highlight tapes and you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but what are your thoughts on what you're seeing from Tony Perkins?
There's plenty of athleticism here, which is maybe the number one thing you look for out of a high school recruit, especially at a wing position. He has a little bit of a three-point shot, it looks like, so he's not going to be completely lost out there. I just am really excited to see what he can do as you work on those fundamentals and make intelligent plays, use that athleticism in the best way. Could really be a really quality prospect in that way and use that athleticism to the best of his ability.
So I think we're all on the same page of this, that Iowa has incredible. I think they're in good shape for the coming seasons. And I think this coming year, they have an opportunity to be tremendous. No question. They have an opportunity to be a top 10 team in the country. If Garza comes back, I think even if he doesn't come back, they're a top 25 team in the country. Is Alex with us, or is he still?
He said he's back.
Okay.
I'm here.
We were just talking about Tony Perkins, Alex, and just what overall this roster, Fran's, I'm liking where Fran's at right now. I know a couple of years ago, you know, they're coming off that really bad season. Bohannon, Cooks, and Moss's sophomore years, I believe.
Was that one of the NAT years?
No, they didn't even make the NIT that year. They actually ended up, 12-20 or something? That was an abysmal season. It's kind of like the 2012 Iowa football year, but I just like where they're at right now.
Hey,
Alex,
3 years after that season, they...
Yeah. 12-0.
Corey, we can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. He's back.
So, Alex, anything to add? I mean, we're kind of drowning on and on, droning, whatever the word is, drowning on and on here. But
we are drowning.
any other thoughts on basketball? I mean, when do you think Garza is going to come out and make a decision? I think he'll make a decision by – I don't think he's going to stretch it on until June 15th. I think we'll hear something by the end of May.
I mean,
but I have no inside information. I just – that's just my thoughts on who he is and who his family is. I just think they'll have a decision by the end of the month.
I mean, if I had to guess, I think he already knows 98% in his own mind. He's just, you know, not going to close the door on either option until he knows 100%. But, you know, it's probably – he probably already knows what he's going to do. And, yeah, I'd say he's probably closer than later to actually making it public.
So are you predicting him come back then?
Yeah.
I think he'll have a decision by the end of the month, but what do I know? I think we're going to be playing basketball at Riverview on July 1st. So, you know.
Anyways. Maybe you will.
He might end up.
I'm going to drive all the way to Marshalltown to play basketball at Riverview with nobody else there.
And I went out there on the court like a week ago.
In the park. I'm just saying.
Oops.
Okay. By the way, now that we're kind of rounding out our discussion on college basketball, we played the song Blinding Lights by The Weeknd before we actually went on with our audience. I'm anxious to kind of get your guys' thoughts on that. The reason we played that song before the podcast, first of all, we can't play it on the podcast due to podcast laws, but that was sort of a theme song for the NFL draft this year. And I'm telling you, I know we had a kind of a – I don't think the crew goes – I don't think you guys were in on – were you on this texting debate that took place about the NFL draft?
I think so, but that was long enough ago, but –
So Alex tried to give everybody a hard time because he thought it was a waste of time that anybody would want to watch the NFL draft. And he's saying this.
No, I didn't say that. I just said that I fell asleep.
Okay. You're saying
you mean
this
like Roger Goodell.
You're saying this in mid-April. And as I said at the time, first of all, what are your guys' thoughts on the song Blinding Lights? I don't like The Weeknd, but that's a cool song.
I liked it. That you might surprise it? You, but I liked it.
You liked it because it sounded like it was from the 80s.
No.
It does, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound like it's from the 80s?
It definitely does.
It literally sounds like it. That's why I love it. It's a cool song. Alex, your thoughts on that tune?
Yeah, I figured that my guy would like it. It's very highly produced, let's say.
Well, I hate highly produced stuff.
I thought it sounded straight out of the 80s.
Yeah, I had that thought too.
Noah?
I liked it. I haven't heard anything else.
But that was such you know, that song is just stuck in my head because it's like the NFL draft to me was such an escape. Mid-April, you're in the middle of this pandemic, and yet we still got the NFL draft. Was that not awesome? I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just being, like I said, I watch NASCAR Sunday, so maybe I'm not a good, good source. But to me, having that draft was huge.
Yeah, Corey, you're on something. I don't know what it is, but if you could send me some, that would be great.
So you guys don't enjoy the NFL draft?
Oh, I do, but I like mostly normally I don't get to, because of my work schedule and when it happens, I don't get to see it live, so I just check on it later. But the whole atmosphere and everything, yeah, it's really cool. And the one time I did get to see it happen – while it was going on live, it was exciting. and especially this year, definitely would have been worth it if I hadn't been working at the time. But I didn't get to actually see this year's NFL draft. So other than Nate Scantling going in, what was it, the seventh round?
Your life really sucks. You're isolated all day, and then they finally have an event on that's you know, an escape, and you're working, and you're cleaning.
Yep.
Noah, your thoughts on the draft?
I still work six nights a week. He also works six nights a week, yes. So it's not like it's going to be much different than me.
Hey, right, I'm just going to say there is a chance for Nate Stanley.
Yeah, what do you guys think about that? Stanley going to the Vikings a little bit later. I thought he'd go maybe fourth, fifth round.
Yeah, I am surprised that he went in the seventh.
It's a long shot, but he might end up being the starting quarterback for the Vikings. I mean, you know, who's he got to fight with? Kirk Cousins?
First of all, if he ends up being the starter for the Vikings this year, that will be – because he's not – I mean, he's going to be the third string quarterback going into camp, right?
Who's their backup?
I don't know. Not Kirk Cousins. That's what I know.
Hold on. I'll look it up.
I am a profound
Kirk Cousins is the starter and backup for every position on the team.
What is this, a Madden roster?
I'm a profound proponent of the anti Kirk Cousins Vikings. I have not believed in him since.
Okay, do you believe in Nate Stanley?
I thought signing Kirk Cousins to extension was a terrible idea. Do I believe in Nate Stanley?
So I looked it up. Stanley's listed as the fourth quarterback on the depth chart.
Behind?
Kirk Cousins, of course. Sean Mannion.
Okay, there's a starting quarterback. Next.
And Jake Browning, who I have never heard of before.
Okay.
I didn't know they had. So Jake Browning, I want to say he's from Washington. Can you confirm that?
Let's see what we've got.
Washington, yes,
he is from Washington.
He is, okay. Yeah, he was a pretty highly touted guy. I don't know if he dealt with some injuries. But, I mean, yeah, I think through and through there's some depth there at quarterback, but it's not top heavy.
I don't like Kirk Cousins. Can I say that?
I think we got that vibe on that. So I think, you know, sky's the limit, and – hey, you know, good for Nate. He's not going to be too far away from his home state of Wisconsin. And, hey, he got drafted. He's going to have a chance to prove himself. And I think we all are Nate Stanley fans, right? I mean, I know that he...
Well, maybe not Micaiah. But
yeah, what's your issue, Micaiah?
No, he's all right. He's better than Jake Rudock.
Really?
Yeah.
Alex, your thoughts on Nate Stanley?
My thoughts on him? Yeah. I mean, I think he's got an NFL potential for sure. I mean, look at his
He's also got the ability to throw really confusing interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, we've hashed this over and over.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let's talk. Let's kind of go backwards a little bit. So, Geno Stone, a guy who left Iowa early to go to the NFL draft, a lot of people projected him going the third or fourth round. He drops to the seventh round and gets drafted by Baltimore. You know, we don't see that whole lot with Iowa players, especially guys who leave early, drop that far down in the draft. You guys surprised that Geno ended up with the Ravens in the seventh round?
That also surprised me. I figured he'd be, you know, maybe a fourth or fifth round kind of player.
A little undersized, but Alex, your thoughts on Iowa star safety falling that far down?
I wasn't terribly surprised. I thought maybe he was a little bit predicted a little bit too highly going into the draft. I felt like he was not too far off of where he went, but.
And how about a guy that was nobody projected higher than maybe the sixth or seventh round? Michael, or as some people say, Ojemudia, goes to the where did he go?
Denver Broncos.
Goes to the freaking Denver Broncos in the third round. Am I losing my mind? Alex, did you expect that at all?
No, I'm not sure what they were seeing.
The Broncos are going to have to change their colors to black and gold if they keep drafting Vikings.
Vikings.
They keep drafting Hawkeyes.
You can't keep Kirk Cousins out of your mind, can you? Noah, what were your thoughts on what were your thoughts on the O-Juice going to Denver?
Hey, good for the Broncos. I mean, they already have a solid defense. They just keep stacking it. That's going to be a couple years down the road, once their young guys that they got in their defense start to hit their stride. That's going to be a scary defense.
It already is a scary defense.
Even scarier.
They don't have an offense.
They'll get there eventually.
Is that what they did here, though, is stack their defense, or did they kind of blow a pick too early?
I don't know.
So you don't buy him being a top 3-round pick, Alex?
I mean, not from my eye test from watching him in college. But, you know, I don't know how he performed.
I mean, he didn't do any. I think he had a pretty darn good senior season. I mean, when did we ever complain about him this past year?
I don't think he's going to be Desmond King, but King has been a pretty good cornerback in the NFL.
And wasn't
NFL.
King drafted in, like, the fourth round?
And Josh Johnson was drafted in the second round?
Josh Jackson.
Sorry.
Which has he been a flop? Would you guys consider him a flop?
He's
kind of a nickelback type guy for Green Bay, but he's not starting.
It's too early to be considered a flop. Give him another year, maybe two.
Is this his third year, though?
Desmond King was drafted in the fifth round in 2017.
Well, that's a steal.
Yeah, especially because in 2019, I want to say, he was statistically, if you look close at the numbers, he was one of the best corner slot defenders there was in the league.
I'd say top 10, 15 corner in the game.
That's a stretch. I'd say that's a stretch. But he is a solid player for being, you know, a second or third string player on a defense, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Micah Hyde, low-key, like top 3 free safety in the NFL. I'm just saying. But that was years ago. He's just been playing on Buffalo for years.
How about A.J. Epenesa falling to the second round? Obviously, he didn't have the best combine performance, but a little bit surprised he fell that low. Ended up getting drafted by the Bills.
Fairly late in the second round, too.
Yeah, I mean, Micaiah, what do you see as, I mean, to me, if I'm the Bills, I got to steal late in the second round with A.J. Epenesa. I mean, look what he did against USC. He went up against Austin Jackson of USC, who's a guy who was drafted very high in the draft this year, and he dominated Austin Jackson in that game. And
he's got all
the
raw talent you could ask for out of a D-end. And he's got plenty of explosiveness, the ability to make a big play. He's got the big play potential that you're really looking for in that top 3-round draft pick, that especially on the defensive end, defensive side of the ball, that end spot is very valuable, but he has that kind of potential that he could be definitely a very explosive player, even on the NFL level. He could end up being a top 10 D end in the NFL.
Well,
maybe
a lot of now. Yeah. I mean, people are saying he's more like an Adrian Claiborne from Iowa, who's been a long time NFL defensive end, but never been a guy like, you know, a Jadeveon Clowney or a JJ Watt.
Clowney's overrated. He's good.
But Clowney. Well, the thing about Clowney is, not very disciplined, very, very skilled, and very, very athletic, not very disciplined. Alex, what were your thoughts on AJ to the Bills in the second round?
Yeah, I think they got to be really happy about that. If I was a Bills fan, you know, I'd be overjoyed. But yeah, you know, we've seen that before. You know, a guy doesn't do terribly well at the draft, but you know, but I think he's a guy that you kind of have to have watched him play to realize his potential, because the amount of impact he had in the time that he was on the field, and how much other deep or how much other O lines, you know, homed in on him, really tells more of a story, I think, than statistics do. So,
yeah, that's something I was thinking about. You think about, because to me, it felt like watching him play, there were times it's like, where is he? And then you look closely and he's being double or triple teamed so that they can hope to contain it. So you can't just look at the stats.
Yep.
And then you look at the first round, Tristan Wirfs goes to the Bucks, gets to protect Tom Brady, play next to Rob Gronkowski. I mean, how awesome is that for a guy like Tristan? And Kirk Ferentz and the staff they've had nothing but good things to say about both Epinesa and Wirfs. Is Wirfs the next great offensive lineman to come out of Iowa?
It definitely seems like it.
I mean, let's think. I saw I think I saw a graphic today. It was talking about you could build maybe one of the best offensive lines in the NFL with former Hawkeyes right now. Austin Blythe, he's a starting guard for the Rams, played in the 2015 Iowa team. James Daniels, we know about that big boy. He's the starting center for the Chicago Bears, I believe.
Yeah.
Brandon Scherff, Pro Bowler for the Redskins. I'm trying to think of the other two.
Bulaga?
I believe Bulaga, because now he's with he parted with Green Bay, and now he's with somebody else. But yeah, Bulaga was on the list.
I don't know if he's that kind of caliber, but Reef was really good.
Reef, Riley. No, that was it. You're right, Riley Reef. He is a starting tackle for Detroit.
Yeah, he was on the
Vikings. Bulaga is on the Chargers as of this year.
Chargers, and is Reef with the Vikings now?
R-E-I.
Yes, I know how to spell it. I'm pretty sure he is. Yeah, current team, Minnesota Vikings.
Okay, they didn't get rid of him. They were cleaning house. I was worried, you know.
And then add Tristan Wirfs in there. And obviously, and then I wanted to show you guys this graphic real quick. This was TJ Hawkinson was asked to build the perfect tight end from former Hawkeye tight ends. For some reason, my email is freezing up here. What's going on here? Why does this always happen? Alex?
Your data just ran out.
Alex, your thoughts?
Yes, but we're still talking.
Here we go. Ultimate tight end, according to TJ Hawkinson. He gave this information to BTN this week. Blocking, Dallas Clark. Size, CJ Fedorowicz. Speed, Noah Fant. Hands, Henry Krieger Coble. Personality, George Kittle. So I've had, you know, it's interesting, people commenting on Twitter based on this post from Big Ten Network. And a lot of people were saying, well, you don't really need to have any of these guys. All you got to do is say this guy right here, George Kittle, encompasses all of those players.
How quickly did he explode to be one of the best tight ends in the NFL?
Well, he is the best tight end in the NFL. I mean, am I right on that?
Right now? Probably, yeah.
I mean, is there really debate on that? Are we really still thinking that Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the NFL? I mean, Alex?
What about a healthy Gronk?
No. No, he's not.
Yeah, I mean, but I think TJ's being a little bit modest there.
Yeah, that's what other people were saying. They said, you know, Henry Krieger Coble did have extremely underrated hands for Iowa in that 2015 year, but I mean, so did TJ Hawkinson.
Yeah.
So, and then we're not even mentioning a couple other guys in this. What about Tony Moyaki? You know, what about who's the kid that played Alan Reisner, another guy that pretty darn good tight end for that 2009 Ricky Stanzi-led Iowa Hawkeye team.
I think maybe for the size, you'd say, never mind. Because how big was Scott Chandler compared to, who did he say, Fedorowicz?
Yeah, I believe he said
Fedorowicz. Yeah. Who are you talking to?
Whomever.
Oh.
I guess they're about the same size. I thought Chandler was a little bigger. But...
yeah, he said Fedorowicz for size. But Fedorowicz, how big was Fedorowicz, Noah?
6'7".
Gosh, can you imagine going up against that big boy?
265. This is 6'6".
But wasn't Scott Chandler a starter for probably 8 years in the NFL, Noah?
I don't remember.
Bills, I think.
Yeah, Bills and Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah, he was solid.
CJ Fedorowicz, 6'7".
I mean, but think about this. If Sam Laporta ends up being the next great tight end at Iowa, you're going to have, and we wish that C.J. Fedorowicz hadn't had to retire because of concussions, you're going to have Noah Fant, George Kittle, T.J. Hockenson, and potentially, and I know I'm jumping the gun, but Sam Laporta, all maybe some of the best tight. I mean, I think there's a chance that those three guys, Kittle and Fant, and Hockenson could be the future of at the tight end position in the NFL in these coming 2 years. Is that overreacting or over, you know, stating their potential, Micaiah?
Meh.
Nice response.
Yeah, what am I supposed to say?
Gosh. Sorry I asked. Well, what am I supposed to say?
Yes or no?
Okay.
This is really entertaining, I'm sure. Long pauses, the random conversation about Iowa tight ends.
Well,
we should live stream one of these.
We're
and
over
just...
2 hours in at this point. What do you expect from us? Quality content?
What'd you say, Alex?
I say we should live stream this and see if anyone tunes in.
Oh, there'd be plenty of people tuning in, believe me.
I don't think we're at that point in our...
What if there was like 150 people?
We would really...
Well, we've almost done 150 shows. So.
That's overachieving.
Gosh.
I ran a live stream once. I got 15 people on, maybe.
Ooh, 15. Oh. I ran a live stream once. I had like...
Four. Okay, we are wrapping things up here because we're about to hit the 2 hour mark, and that's when I have decided to pass out for the week. But we talked about
he falls asleep until tonight's podcast.
We talked about Garza potentially in the NBA draft. We talked about the NFL draft, kind of our reactions to that. What a year, by the way, for Iowa football. Great for recruiting. You get five guys who are drafted, another first round pick, another second round pick, and a third round pick. Great year for Kirk Ferentz and recruiting wise. Speaking of recruiting, that's kind of where we're going to finish things up here. Talk about what Kirk Ferentz has been able to do here, because I know you guys have been infiltrated with text messages from me over the past month, but they've had a tremendous stretch of recruiting.
That's what it looks like.
We're not used to
my text message history.
We're not used to saying that about Iowa, but you look at 2020. Rivals 150 rankings as of right now, and this is not going to hold true. Iowa's going to fall down, but they're not going to fall down that much. Look at this. National rankings. Iowa at number 8.
This is obviously a fake list. Where is Alabama?
Yeah, isn't that weird? Now, again, it's early. A lot of these higher, you know, top recruits for 2021 have not committed, and they're going to commit to Alabama. They're going to commit to Clemson. Some of these schools are going to pass Iowa. Iowa, I think, has a chance to stay in the top 20 if they get a few more commitments. They got a commitment today, which you did not get a text from me about, and that was defensive lineman Jeremiah Pittman, is a guy that, again, committed to Iowa over several other major offers, including Boston College, Wisconsin, Missouri, Iowa State, Michigan State, Syracuse, and Illinois. And 15th recruit that has committed for 2021. They did get one decommitment this past week. A cornerback with the last name of Olatokun, he decommitted. But that's going to happen here and there. You're going to get decommitments. But overall, this recruiting class has been a lot better than normal. And that's despite this pandemic. And that's what makes me think, and I think I said that to some people just in passing this past month. I think there's no question you have to attribute a lot of this to the fact that these recruits trust Kirk Ferentz and they trust the way he approaches things. And we've got a lot of uncertainty with this pandemic and what's going to happen with sports. And one thing that I think all these athletes would agree with, they know what they're going to get with Kirk Ferentz. You can see the commitments they've had so far. You've got Pittman, you've got Keegan Johnson from Bellevue, Nebraska. He's a wide receiver that, again, three-star recruit, kid that I'm really excited about, a lot of speed, reminded me a little bit of Amir Smith-Marset. Brody Brecht, a kid that I did not think Iowa had a chance with maybe 6 months ago, really big-time recruit in the central Iowa area from Ankeny. Arlen Bruce from Kansas City. He's a kid that a little bit undersized, but they have him coming in as an athlete listed on Rivals. And, you know, we'll see where Kirk and the staff want to put him. This is probably the best recruit. I mean, if you look at it from a pure recruiting standpoint, a ranking standpoint, David Kov, offensive lineman from Illinois, 6'6", 290-pound, four-star offensive lineman. We all know, Noah, that Iowa is known for developing offensive linemen. And now you're seeing this on here, that Iowa is starting to get some of these offensive linemen that are higher ranked coming to Iowa. And I don't know what that does other than boost Iowa's offensive line even more than it already is.
It's crazy to think about
how they don't get guys
the
like
offensive
that.
Line is going to be.
Yeah, they don't get guys like this. I mean, you and I both know this. They develop the Brandon Scherfs. Tristan Wirfs was a pretty high recruit. I'll give you that. But they develop a lot of these guys. Austin Blythe was a kid who was definitely developed. Now is a starting guard in the NFL. James Daniels and Tristan Wirfs are probably the two highest recruits that Iowa's had in recent times. But Marshall Yanda, Robert Gallery. A lot of these guys, they got here and they were bred into excellent offensive linemen for the Hawkeyes. Bo Stevens, another offensive lineman from Missouri, three-star recruit that figures to play into the offensive line mix. Max Llewellyn, a guy who's played multiple positions, I believe, defensive end from Des Moines. He's got some size at 6'5", 230. Cooper DeJean, he's a guy that Ida Grove, Iowa, heard good things about him, I believe. Linebacker primarily. They've got him listed as an athlete on Rivals. Jeff Bowie from West Branch. Zach Tweet, another guy that had committed to Iowa State and decommitted, ended up going to Iowa. He's a tight end from Story City, just north of the Ames area. Justice Sullivan, another highly touted linebacker, four-star recruit coming to Iowa. Griffin Liddell from Bettendorf, a three-star defensive tackle. Jaden Harrell, three-star linebacker, and then another four-star offensive lineman, Noah, and Connor Colby from Cedar Rapids. And then finally Jennings Dunker from Lena, Illinois, a 6'5 offensive lineman. So I don't know. Maybe I'm jumping the gun on this, but this is the best class that I can remember for Iowa football, and I think this pandemic has, in a way, helped recruiting for this very balanced and very even-keel Iowa coaching staff. And the crickets start.
We're 2 hours in.
What are your thoughts? You've been following this a little bit, probably not as much as I have, but what do you attribute to the recruiting surge for this year's football team? Or I guess this year's recruiting class, coming year's recruiting class.
I'm not really sure what to attribute it to. I've thought about it, but I can't really come up with much. I think, I don't know, maybe Iowa's been on the radar more nationally lately. You have to think that having guys like Kittle, you know, make a splash in the pros, and, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Iowa was undefeated. I think maybe they have a little bit more exposure now than we've seen. I'm not sure why we seem to be seeing a bit of a jump this year versus, say, last year, but that's
the only
thing.
You don't attribute any of that to the pandemic?
I've thought about it. I just don't know. It would be hard for me to say one way or another. I mean, I know what you said about, you know, knowing what they can get from Kirk Ferentz.
And you can't visit campuses. I mean, you can't go to visit other schools right now. So
there is one thing that might be partially contributing. I have no real clue because I'm not that in the loop, but being as disconnected as the Midwest is from the rest of the country and some of the other hot spots, things are likely to clear up here first, where they could maybe get into camp faster,
keep in mind, these are 2021 guys.
So these are not guys. Even.
Yeah, I mean, these are. I really do think that. I think it comes down to more so, will they be able to, in this coming recruiting period, be able to visit other schools? And, you know, if you wait on committing, you may not have a home, right? Because teams are going to run out of spots for you. So I think a lot of these players, and maybe that's why a lot of Kuhn, if that's how you pronounce his name, maybe that's why he decommitted. He committed kind of on a whim. But, you know, that's going to happen anyways. I just think a lot of guys they feel like they need to make a decision quickly. They can't wait around, and the safest decision right now is Kirk Ferentz. And I think in the end, it may end up helping Kirk. And that's such a weird thing to think of because we think of Kirk as such a old school guy. He's talked about this past month how he had never heard of Zoom before this pandemic broke out. Now they use it all the time, but that
you
just
know,
goes
I,
to show.
I haven't heard of it either.
Yeah, neither.
And that just goes to show you, though, the importance of. You know, Kirk Ferentz, even though he's old school, he can adjust to the times. And he's seeing the fruits of hard work right now. That entire coaching staff is. And so we'll see. I think we're all excited about football this next year. We're not going to take a lot of time to talk about football today. We're kind of more just talking about if football is going to happen. I think once we figure out, yeah, it's going to happen or no, it's not, we can start breaking down what the season is going to look like. We've got a tough schedule ahead of them. We know that they cut things down to an 8 or 9 game schedule. Right now they've got 9 conference games scheduled, 5 of which are on the road this year, 2 of which those road games are Penn State and Ohio State. They play those 2 road games back-to-back. So I don't know if you can get a tougher back-to-back, Noah, than Penn State and Ohio State, but that's what Iowa's up against this year. So, you know, kudos to Kirk Ferentz. He's done what he's needed to do during this pandemic to continue the surge that Iowa's continue to have. And again, Jeremiah, what was his name? Jeremiah, oh, I don't remember. The defensive lineman from, I want to say, Chicago area? Pittman, Jeremiah Pittman. That's, again, just another example of the success that they've had. So we'll continue to follow recruiting. We'll follow basketball recruiting. We do know that DJ, a couple other things we haven't touched on. DJ Carton, former Bettendorf 5-star basketball recruit, announced since we were on the podcast last that he was transferring. Some Iowa fans thought he might transfer to play at Iowa. Iowa basketball doesn't have a spot for him right now in the guard court, and I know that some people have said, well, you're going to make a spot for a 5-star kid. I don't know that there was interest either way, but he announced he's going to be going to Marquette. Leon Robbins, big man for Drake, announced he'll be transferring to Minnesota with Daniel Oturu declaring for the draft. Some Iowa fans thought Robbins may come to Iowa, but I think Fran's pretty set on this roster right now. Alex, we mentioned Cordell Pemsl leaving. Real quickly, was that a big surprise to you that he opted to go and especially go into a place like Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, still don't really know his reasoning, but, you know, we didn't really have any. I didn't feel like there was a real reason to suspect that was going to happen, but, you know, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of new talent coming in. It's just hard to know what his reasoning on it was.
Am I missing anything else, guys? Alex, am I missing anything from this past month that we haven't covered? We talked about all the announcements for the Iowa basketball team. We scant Bohannon, the Nungy news, the Garza lack of news, and, of course, the Pimsel news. Is there anything we're missing?
Not that I can think of.
Micaiah... You know, if I screenshotted, if our listeners can see what your face looks like right now, you, first of all, you look like you're about to pass out. And then I look behind you, and you've got a stack. Alex, have you seen the stack?
I saw that early on.
Those are just Xbox games. Those are
the green ones, yeah. Green.
So,
if you're running out of room, you should just start storing them in the ceiling tiles.
We do have a suspended ceiling.
There you go. Then when they get too heavy, they can fall out and crash on your head.
We had a shelf that all of that stuff was on, and we're painting the wall. We had to pull the shelf away. All the stuff had to come off the shelf. It's just sitting on the couch until we move the shelf back.
Well, the bottom line is we appreciate everybody coming on the podcast tonight. We're trying to keep sort of a once a month, at least stay with our listeners. And, you know, we're trying the new platform out. Of our storycounty.news platform. You see how much you guys have explored it, but the section of the website from the Eye of the Storm, and that's where you can find Brad's Branded Thoughts. So we'll post week 118 to storycounty.news. We're working on getting the Facebook page launched for the news site. Of course, we have our Brad's Branded Thoughts news page still active. So still like and share all the posts from Brad's Branded Thoughts on Facebook. Visit storycounty.news for local Story County news and also Iowa Hawkeye news broadcasted from the Eye of the Storm from Ames, Iowa. Anything else to add anywhere around the panel? Krukos, Alex, anybody?
A kind of unrelated question. Go ahead, Noah.
Typo description for week 117.
Say that again.
A typo in your description for week 117. We're looking back at the 2019 to 2010 college basketball season that was.
That's a good point. How did that happen? You know what? I don't want to displace the blame, but I don't think I was the one who actually... I'm glad you noticed that, Noah.
It's just a simple, you know, they're right next to each other. You just... one different key. That's all it is. So what were you going to say, Alex?
Oh, I was going to ask about if that... I know that John helped you with the website, but is that what he does for a living?
No, he designs software for companies, but he does sell domains. So what you're seeing on my screen right now is WordPress, which is a I don't know if you know what WordPress is, but it's basically a if I can explain a techie thing. Accurately, it's basically a website design tool that functions under domain sellers like GoDaddy.com, and you know he's got a WordPress account, and so we're able to use that WordPress account to you know design our website. And I'll have to show you here. This is
maybe
as simple
after
as it is.
We end the.
Yes, let's end this thing.
I miss basketball. I'll just say that. I never got to make my comment. I miss actual basketball. Even March Madness. I know it's not the NBA. Oh. I'm more of an NBA guy, but I just miss basketball.
Last thing before we go. Are we going to see NBA again this year?
I'm still in the yes camp, but they're going to have to be drastic with the changes that they make. And I'm not entirely sure everybody's on board with that yet. But if it comes to drastic changes or canceling the season, I feel like they'd rather make the drastic changes.
Yeah, they want to finish the season in some form or fashion.
Yep.
It's just a matter
and
of
I,
whether you're okay with whatever risk and
situation.
Yeah.
Also.
Well, let's be honest. I want to say this one more thing. If college football doesn't happen this fall for some reason, I think it will in some form. But if for some reason it doesn't happen, and if they have it in spring, and by the spring we're out of this mess, right? As much as it's going to suck these next 6 to 7 months, how freaking awesome will it be from January to April to have college football and March Madness and, you know, NBA and
the Super Bowl
and the Super Bowl. And for me, the new golf season, I get to see the
and
Masters.
Spring training for baseball.
I get to see the Masters. And then because it's the spring football season, I know it, you know, coaching staffs and trainers are concerned about player safety. So maybe the next season gets pushed back, but it theoretically is going to be a shortened off season. And then we're going to get football again that fall. So I don't know. It, you know what?
Does
I don't
go from playing football to playing football. Is that how it works?
Would you be averse to that?
No, like finishing the football season, going from like March to May or maybe February to May, and then playing football again in August.
Would you have a problem with that?
No.
I know, and that's the thing. Player safety is important. So we'll just see. We're going to have to wait and see. Can we all agree on this? Next time we get on here, hopefully in June, we all figure to have a little bit more clarity.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we definitely hope so.
At the very least, we'll have an idea on whether or not things like the NBA are coming back, what college football is looking like more clearly at that point.
What the NFL season is going to look like.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that. So we'll end it right there. We've hit our 2-hour limit. And be back with week 119. I know we keep calling it week. We should switch it to month. Month 119.
Right? Why not just call it episode 119?
You know, we've got a lot of time on our hands. We could be doing a podcast every day, except we wouldn't get any listeners. So anyway.
We could just put a headset on all the time and just have our entire lives be podcast.
Today on Brightest Branded Thoughts, Micaiah paints the other part of the wall.
You know, Micaiah watches
the paint dry instead of watching NASCAR.
You know what's scary is as bored as people are right now, we would probably get people that would tune into a live stream of that.
Hey, I watched NASCAR Sunday.
Wall painting. Competitive wall painting. They would pay. There would be people lining up down the street to stand 6 feet away from me as I paint the wall to see how fast I can do it.
Let's be honest, Micaiah. As much as this pandemic has affected the economy and affected people's finances, there are ways to make money because of the changes in technology. Think about what Zoom is doing. Think about what Skype and all these companies. They're thriving in certain areas right now. And so innovative minds. So just get out
being a work from home kind of person has never been more profitable than it is right now.
Well, being a video game person has never been more profitable than right now. I've
gone this far in my life without becoming a professional gamer. And I've thought about it.
Now might be the time to live stream on Twitch or whatever it is.
I don't have an audience. I don't have a personality to sell.
This is when you'll have your big boom if you're ever going to have a chance at a lot of people watching. It's right now.
Yeah.
True. All right. Let's wrap it up there. For Noah Kruko, Micaiah Kruko, Alex Brada, I'm Corey Brada. For Brada's Branded Thoughts, week 118. We'll talk to you again for week 119 in June. Everybody stay safe. Social distance. Let's get out of this thing as soon as we can and get back to our regular routines and back to the sports that we love and cherish. Again, this has been Brada's Branded Thoughts. We'll talk to you soon. Go Hawks.